This is your tech news briefing for Wednesday, September 30th. I'm Amanda Llewellyn for The Wall Street Journal. Yesterday, we told you about a ransomware attack on a Las Vegas area school district. Now, we have news of yet another attack, this time on Universal Health Services, one of the biggest hospital chains in the country. Schools, hospitals. On today's episode, we break down why hackers have been setting their sights on these kinds of critical institutions and why that trend might outlast the pandemic. Our reporter Robert McMillan will help us do it after these headlines. A federal court has dismissed a privacy lawsuit against Google. The suit, brought by the state of New Mexico, had alleged that Google knowingly spied on students and their families through its suite of cloud-based products for schools. Here's our reporter Sarah Needleman with more.
According to the lawsuit, the state alleged that Google collected troves of personal information, including students' physical locations, the websites they visit, what they search for on the internet, even videos that they looked at on YouTube. And the state also said that students, even though students and parents can opt out of allowing Google to read their data, the lawsuit alleges that that option is buried in settings where parents will likely never see it.
In her ruling, the judge wrote that even though Google had buried that option to opt out, the law does not require that the notice be written in terms that a child would understand. The judge also pointed to recent guidance from the Federal Trade Commission, which says that schools can serve as intermediaries for parental notice and consent. New Mexico's attorney general said he disagrees with the outcome of the case and that the state would continue to litigate to protect children's privacy. And later today, the data mining company Palantir and the business software maker Asana are set to go public via direct listings on the New York Stock Exchange. Direct listings skirt the usual process of using investment banking underwriters, and they're becoming increasingly popular alternatives to traditional IPOs. But they are still pretty new. Prior to today, only two major companies have completed direct listings, Spotify and Slack. And our reporter Corey Driebusch says the process might slow things down today.
In an IPO, the night before the stock is listed, buyers and sellers are matched at a certain IPO price. That doesn't happen in a direct listing. The company simply floats its shares on the open market and finds the right price at which to open the stock for trading. And that can take a while. With Spotify, for instance, its stock didn't open until 12:43 p.m. That's far later in the day than traditional IPOs typically begin trading. So to have two going the same day, what's so tricky is you could do the price discovery process for one company and stagger it and open it and then wait for the second company to start their price discovery process. That could really delay the second company till very, very late in the day. So instead, what we've been told is that the price discovery process is going to start for both companies at the same time, but they're still going to try to stagger the openings by an hour or two.
After the break, why we're seeing so many ransomware attacks. That's next. Ransomware attacks have been on the rise recently. That's the kind of cyber attack where hackers find a way to install their software on a computer network and then encrypt the data on that network, making it impossible for the victim to access it unless they pay a ransom. Yesterday, we talked about an attack on a Las Vegas area school district. But this week, we also learned that one of the country's largest hospital chains, Universal Health Services, had also been hit. So why are we seeing so much ransomware lately? And why are they targeting these sorts of institutions rather than banks or other big corporations with lots of cash on hand? Our reporter Robert McMillan has been looking into this, and he joins me now to explain. Bob, thank you so much for joining me.
Hey, Amanda.
Okay, so with this Universal Health Services attack, can you just give us a sense for how the hospital system was impacted?
They were affected in two ways. On the early morning of Sunday, there was a ransomware attack that started spreading very quickly around the network. And so Universal Health, they shut down their network. So part of the reason that there was such a disruption was because of the ransomware, but also was part of it was just a response to the ransomware, like let's shut everything down so it doesn't spread. So there were 250 hospitals and care facilities affected. there were, you know, important computer systems were not reachable. The company wasn't able to do email. We were communicating with their PR person via a Gmail account. But more importantly, the lab systems, the things that you need to just from a computerized perspective to run a hospital were offline. They were forced to turn away ambulances that were coming to some of the hospitals. It was pretty disruptive, and it was disruptive across many facilities, which is something that was unusual.
And what about the patients? Was there an impact there?
They say patient care was not affected by this, but I think from my perspective, that's a hard statement to make at this point, right? Like, we know that if you're supposed to get a test or something like that, and there's a delay in that, in your ability to get a test, that could have outcomes in the long term. So it's sort of a squishy problem, but we don't know of anyone who, you know, for example, who died because the ambulance couldn't come to a facility and give them treatment right away.
And, you know, on the data side of things, any attack where private data is made public is an issue, but I imagine that's a particularly thorny issue for hospitals in particular. What do we know about this case?
Well, if there was data access, then that's a big HIPAA problem. Universal Healthcare is saying that they are not aware of any patient data being accessed, but that's, you know, that becomes another level of concern. And we know that if the regulators believe a ransomware attack amounts to essentially a loss of control of the data, and that is a HIPAA violation. Now, it can also depend on the architecture of your network. You might have, it is possible to build a network in such a way where the data is actually residing, you know, remotely somewhere far away. So even if the computers are hit with ransomware, the computers themselves might not be housing the data. So we don't know if that's what happened with Universal Health or not. They're saying that they're not aware of any personal data being accessed here.
And, you know, Bob, I'm wondering, with these sorts of ransomware attacks, you would think they would typically target big entities that have lots of money. How unusual is this attack on a hospital system?
Well, it's not that unusual. I mean, one thing that's changed in the last few years is a lot of entities now have cyber insurance. So they basically, instead of having to come up with like $10 million in Bitcoin, which is kind of a hard thing to do if you've ever tried it, they have policies and their insurance company will come in and they'll simply, they'll be insured for what happens. Basically, almost all large organizations in the United States have these policies now. So whereas a few years ago, you know, we had this example with the city of Atlanta, where they had a $51,000 ransomware demand in 2018. They didn't pay it, but they ended up spending $7 million like fixing the system over months and months. Nowadays, I think the actual payment of it is not the problem it once was. There's sort of ways of paying it. And in fact, some people think that that's made things worse, right? Like, it's made it more lucrative for the criminals to get into ransomware. So we're seeing payouts happening more often. You know, it's not uncommon to have $10 million, $20 million, $30 million demands. And there's a real concern right now that this is fueling the problem. So to step back, the reason that hospitals and counties, I think, are being attacked as much as they are is because these are institutions that have a different mission. Rather, you know, they their mission is, you know, educating students or patient care. And just historically, they haven't pushed cybersecurity to the front of what they're doing. They're not like banks. Banks have been under, you know, attack for years. So it's much harder to hit a bank than it is to hit a hospital or a county. And once you break into one, you kind of learn the techniques that can help you get into another one.
And, you know, we knew that cyber attacks were increasing in the pandemic. What does this widening out of the types of targets tell us about hackers' methods and how they're going about this?
Well, they tell us, for one thing, that there's no truce going on. I mean, some people in the cybersecurity world thought that with a global pandemic, the bad guys would keep hospitals off limits, right? I mean, they're under enough pressure as it is. They're dealing with an influx of coronavirus cases. It's just a tough job. And we've all got friends and relatives who are at risk because of this. So what kind of a person would take out a hospital right now? But that's not the case. People are hitting them. They're trying to get money from them. And so, you know, that the first most obvious thing is that there was no truce that happened. And the, you know, there is some speculation. I mean, you wonder what the effects of having remote workers are. I mean, there is some evidence that healthcare entities are not patching as frequently as they were pre-pandemic. We don't really know why that is, but it might be that having a diverse workforce makes it harder just to keep everybody's systems up to date.
Right. We've reported that we're expecting to see a lot more flexible remote work policies even after the pandemic is over. I guess the big question is, how do we combat this moving forward?
Well, I mean, it's really, we've seen, like I said, with the banking industry, we've seen these kinds of problems before. And the best advice you can follow right now is don't be the low-hanging fruit, because clearly the bad guys like to go after easy targets. So the first thing is to just, you know, do these super basic things, like make sure that you're installing software updates, understanding what the most common ways that things are being broken into are, and have, you know, outside penetration testing companies or security companies come do an assessment and make sure that you're not one of the easy targets. And then the other question is, what do we do about these payments? You know, should we be making them? Is there an alternative? You know, if you're working for a hospital and you're confronted with days of outage, or the alternative is to make a ransomware payment and end the pain much more quickly, you know, there really isn't an alternative. And that's maybe a bigger problem for the industry. Is there a way we can make recovering from something like this quicker and easier and more painless? I don't have the answer to that one.
All right. Wall Street Journal reporter Robert McMillan. Thanks, Bob.
Thanks, Amanda. Always fun to chat with you.
That's it for today's tech news briefing. You can find more tech stories on our website, WSJ.com. And if you like our show, please do rate and review us in your app store. It really does help. I'm your host, Amanda Llewellyn. Thanks for listening.